Sustainable high-performance materials for a changing world. Dear audience, my name is Ludmila Dehr. I'm the Managing Director of Elite Experts Conferences, and I would like to welcome you to the next episode of the Elite Experts Conferences podcast. Whether at live events or in the digital world, we bring together cool, promising tech startups with exciting, innovative global players and generate a platform where the world of sustainable technology meets. Get to know the different companies, but also the inspiring leader personalities behind these brand names. Our motto is towards a better and cleaner future through knowledge transfer and technology. Today, I have an outstanding guest on the podcast, who particularly my audience with the automotive background might be familiar with. Let me introduce you to Han Hendricks, the CTO at Trinzio. We met for the very first time live on stage at the Green Auto Summit in 2021. Han was in a panel discussion that I moderated, and at that time as the CTO at Yanfeng. In October 2022, Han joined Trinzio as CTO and recently became also the Chief Sustainability Officer. Today, we will be talking about sustainability, about bold strategies, about the direction in which the chemical industry or particularly plastic production is moving, but also about what led Han to make the leap from the automotive industry to the chemical industry. We will focus on technical and strategic topics, but as always, we will not neglect the topic of self-development and personal growth. And now, let's start.
Actually, in October 2022, you became the CTO from Trinzio. And actually, when we look at your past, it's really a masterpiece of diversity of interests. And I have really to look it up because you hold a bachelor degree in architectural design from the Academy of Fine Arts in Maastricht and an MBA from the University of Westminster in London. And then you completed also postgraduate studies in industrial design at the Università Internazionale dell'Arte in Firenze. So how does this all come together? I mean, And now with this whole expertise in technical things, but also in creative design, I mean, that's not the usual path for the CTO of a Trinzio company, which is like chemical company. Is that somehow unusual? Are you an exception in that field? Or are you actually maybe the norm even at a certain altitude? Because you have to have overview of so many things. So how do you see that personally?
Right. So, first of all, maybe two things. To me, it's perfectly logical what you just described and how it came together. But it's also not very intentional and not very thought out long in advance. And I'm just executing my own master plan. I think combination of having a technical creative study and then later on a business study is, I think, very important when you work in business and you want to advance your career. It's also good to not only have the general business education, but to have something unique that makes you unique. In my case, this was this creative side, this design side, when I joined my first job in an R&D environment. But I always knew at some point I want to add business education to my resume. As a matter of fact, when I was 16, 17 years old and I had to make that important choice in life, what am I going to study? It was a conversation with my father that helped me make that decision very quickly. I said, "Dad, I have two interests. One is in this creative design technology direction, and the other one is business. I like to build things, work with teams, grow things. What should I do?" He said, "You start with your creative design studies because everything else will follow naturally." And I think that was a great piece of advice. That's how it happened. After 10 years of working experience, no, 6 years of working experience, I did an MBA in London. And then a few things started to fall in place and it all makes sense. And how to leverage technology and design and creativity to accelerate business and innovation. So that was, to me, a very logical combination.
Now I'm impressed additionally by another detail that you at 16 or 17 already knew that you are interested in business. I mean, that's already per se very, very unusual, I would say, at least.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. And when we talk about like decision making, is it more based on experience and totally rational, or is it more about intuition?
So it's very much about intuition. And I think intuition is also, intuition is also rational, right? It's also pragmatic because it's a certain ability to connect dots very quickly in your head that you can describe as intuition or gut feeling. It's really leveraging the data you have stored in different places based on experiences and what you've learned. And I think intuition helps you make quick decisions with less data.
Basically, maybe in the end, intuition is only just learned experience.
Yes, exactly.
That becomes the gut feeling.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, and now you are at Trinseo, and actually for already more than 2 years. And Trinseo established itself as leader in high-performance materials. And I'm very happy to add, like, sustainable high-performance materials.
Yes,
that's
important.
Why I'm here.
Yes.
Exactly. And you work in so many markets. It's like it's automotive, it's electronics, it's packaging. How to stay competitive in such broad markets that have all very, very different demands?
So in my view, three things are important. First of all, you have to be very close to your customers. And specifically when it comes to our materials, they're being used in very different products, from automotive interiors to iPads and medical equipment, etc. So you have to be very close to your customers. But these products are much more complex than only our material. So when it comes to our material for these products, we have to be the experts. We need to know more than our customers. So being close to our customers is first. Second is you have to have a point of view on the future. In order to be a strategic partner to our customers instead of just a transactional partner, we have to have as a company our view on where the future is going relative to our industry and our portfolio, so we can be a true partner to our customers for their future products. And then the third critical success factor to stay ahead is our ability to attract talent, the best talent in the industry. I think the war for talent is maybe a cliche, but it's definitely going on. And we invest in trying to be a good company to attract talent and retain talent and develop talent.
I will definitely have more questions on the that. So talent attraction, etc. So,
yes.
But actually, let's talk about predicting the future, because when it comes to acquisition or mergers, etc.,
yes,
it's also a lot about predicting the future. Like where is it going? Which technology will be needed in the future? What makes sense?
Yes.
Makes sense a collaboration or really acquisition, etc.
Yep.
And the chemical industry has seen lots and lots of significant consolidation trends. And also, you did in the past also a couple of acquisitions.
Yes.
I want to mention one particular, let's say, Arkema PMA business. So
yeah.
How did it happen? Let's say, what was the strategic decision behind this acquisition? So
I think Trinseo is quite a young company, 12 years old, I think 12 years, something like that. So relatively young compared to our peers in the industry. We're also not the largest, we're not the smallest, but we're also not the largest chemical company in the world. So for us, it's very important to be explicit about what our vision and strategy for the future is. Either we become a large company with a more commodity-based portfolio, or we become a specialty solutions company with unique solutions for our customers, specific material attributes. We choose to go the second route in combination with, obviously, the sustainability of our material, circularity, low CO2. That's the direction we choose. And PMMA as a material technology fits perfectly in that portfolio of specialty products. The applications for PMMA are in automotive, as well as in signage, in displays. So high-tech applications fits very well in our vision to become a sustainable solutions company. Solutions, not commodities.
I actually love that sustainability fits perfectly in your strategy.
Yes.
That's the first fact. So But I know that it's quite bold to say that because you have always to balance like, okay, it's short-term profitability against the long-term investment. So because it is investment intensive, at least in the beginning. So how do you balance that when you go in these bold strategic steps into sustainability?
Yeah, so maybe let me say this. So sustainability, we have completely internalized. It's at the heart of what we do going forward, but it's not the only thing. There are other factors, important technology attributes for our materials that are also important. Lightweight, but maybe you can add lightweight to sustainability. So it's not, it's circularity, it's low CO2, it's lightweight, but it's also for future applications, increasingly important, the thermal attributes, properties of our material, the optical properties of our material, because we want to move into markets that grow, that have a strong CAGR. Displays is one application. So the optical quality, the optical performance of our materials is equally important, especially when you talk about recycled materials, where you need to achieve a certain level of purity for optical applications. And then another, I think, very important property of our material is beauty, is design. Many of our material applications are surface applications, whether it's in furniture or automotive interiors. So they actually, they're directly in the face of the consumer, sees it, touch it. So the visual performance, visual quality in terms of color and gloss and grain is very important. Touch. So all of those things are important. Then coming more to your question, circular material and price competitiveness to virgin materials. It is our vision to recycle materials that currently are not recyclable. And later today, you will see our PC dissolution technology in action in our pilot plant. And there we are actually achieving our target to recycle materials that are currently only used for landfill or incineration. So when you have a technology that is capable of taking waste that nobody wants and turn that into a virgin quality new product, then you can also be cost competitive, because waste that nobody wants, you help get rid of the waste that nobody wants. So there is a cost opportunity there, ultimately driving price competitiveness of the circular product. That's our ambition. We're accelerating on the path to achieve that and working with a few customers who really like that value proposition.
Just seeing that theoretically, it's genius.
Yes.
To say the least. Okay. And actually, that is how you go, or how you decide how to go in the new market. So yes. What I saw also, like what I see, that you can really, because you are in so many markets, you can really take one technology and see like, oh, we would have applications in another markets. That all totally makes sense. But how to make the decision when you have to stop something because you shut down, for example, the polycarbonate plant in Germany. So how did you make this decision? Like, okay, we are not going forward here.
Yes. Well, that decision was really a very, not an easy decision, by the way, but a very clear decision. Not an easy decision because of the impact on the people and the environment, but an easy decision because we just couldn't make the economics work anymore in Europe. Chemical industry in general is a high energy intensive industry. And with the uncompetitiveness of Europe as a region when it comes to the price of energy or the cost of energy, we couldn't make it work. We just couldn't make it work. And it's clearly not just Trenzeo. All our peers are shutting down their assets in Europe and reducing their footprint in Europe because of the because it's impossible to compete at a global scale at the moment in Europe. So it was a difficult decision. There is overcapacity in the market for PC dissolution. What we were producing, or what we still are producing in Stade in Germany, in China, in the last 2 years, the capacity that was added in China is equal to the global capacity. It was added in China in a window of 2 years. So you can imagine the overcapacity in combination with the reduced demand globally, in combination with high energy prices in Europe, just didn't make the economics work.
Actually, pretty impressive how you decide, let's say, where to go and where not. And said, like, even as sad as it is such a clear decision. And we will talk about the European position in the global market a bit more later on. But let's continue first with the sustainability, because that became really one of the cornerstones of Transia's strategy.
Yes.
Otherwise, I would not be here.
Right.
Let's say it like this. So what specific innovation are you most excited about that you put in the strategic portfolio for the next year? So maybe you already mentioned that, taking the waste and creating something high-performance materials out of it. So
yes, but we have other examples as well. So I think this is a really important one also because it's dissolution technology. So it's not chemical, it's not mechanical. Dissolution is physical recycling. So we use a solvent to extract materials from the product. In this case, PC, polycarbonate, or ABS, or PC-ABS, where we use this technology. And as you say, it's important for two reasons. First of all, it is a truly circular solution. So you can do this over and over again. So you have a keyboard made of polycarbonate. The keyboard at the end of the life, we put it in our process. We dissolve it, we process it, and the virgin quality material that comes out can be used to make the next keyboard. And you can keep doing this over and over again, or a dashboard, or a door panel, or whatever product. So it's truly circular. Second is, it reduces CO2 compared to virgin production by up to 80%. That is huge. So 80% less CO2 reduction, and basically resulting in the same virgin quality material. And then the third element, which is our USP specifically for this technology, is the fact that we can use waste that nobody wants that goes into landfill or incineration. And we process it to become virgin quality material for the next whatever product you want.
Actually, now the chemist with the PhD in material science in me is awakened. So I want to know, like, in those cycles, how much of the material do you actually lose? So via recycling, let's say so.
So it depends on the purity of the waste. If we take...
roundabout, so we have a couple of numbers.
So I would say... 15%. Mm-hmm. So the yield is actually very high. The purity is very high, and the yield is very high. A similar process for PMMA, since you brought up PMMA, we are able to achieve 90% of the material, to regain 90% of the material with a yield of about 90%. And a purity of up to 99.5-99.7%. So very high purity, very high yield. Yes.
Actually, let's dive into the details of the recycling technology that you established. How do you measure the environmental impact and also the business success of such projects? And are you already there where you want to go, or is that still on the way?
So LCA, life cycle analysis, is obviously a very important metric for our portfolio. Also because, it's a very dynamic ecosystem that is emerging between the players in the value chain, our suppliers, our customers, their customers, the end consumer. Scope 1, 2, 3 is obviously very much on our radar. So LCA is very important in measuring the environmental impact of our portfolio. From a business point of view, we are moving towards becoming a sustainable solutions company, which means that we target higher margins than our commodity peers. Let's say it like that. We have to be competitive with virgin material from a pricing point of view. I think we will have a window of opportunity where customers are willing to pay a certain premium because of the just initial cost is higher to produce. But in the end, especially the market that we both know quite well, the automotive market, the next generation product has to be lower cost than the current generation. The margins are very thin, so cost is an essential part of the success of our recycled portfolio. But on the other hand, we know that there is no way back. This is the path that we are on. And at some point in the future, our portfolio will be 100% recyclable.
So you're very optimistic about the goals for the 2030 then?
Yes, absolutely. Well, we have goals for 2030, but then it doesn't stop, right? In 2030, we're not at 100% zero carbon emissions and 100% recyclable. So that continues. But in certain markets, like in the automotive market with the ELV directive going to effect in 2030, that's where our customers are working now to achieve those targets. 25% recycled content, of which 25% has to be circular, so 6% of the total. That's not an easy target, but we have the solution. We have a solution. What's also interesting, because some of my colleagues who are less intimate with automotive, is the fact that cars that will go into production in 2030 are being decided today. Materials are being designed today. Material requirements are being put on paper as we speak for cars that go into production in 2030. So this is the window of opportunity, not in 3 years from now, at least looking at the automotive industry.
The cycle times are not changing so fast in automotive.
That's exactly.
Like really 5 years, absolutely.
By the way, that makes it really interesting for us, because we work across different markets. The cycle times in our consumer electronics part of the business is obviously much faster than automotive.
I learned from last time, now half a year or something.
6 months, exactly. Which is very exciting, because also some of the big brands that are our customers in the consumer market, they are also sustainability leaders, and they really push us to go beyond what we have today in terms of recycled content, circular materials. And this is knowledge that we're building up that we can leverage in more conservative markets like the automotive market.
As you know, when I listen to you, it's like another world, because usually, and I come from the chemical industry from, yes, let's say, from the very beginning. No? So, and usually chemical industry is very traditional one. So, but you are very much forward thinking. So how do you encourage this kind of innovation mindset within the company, within already like, yeah, not the biggest, but still already huge company?
Yeah. So when I joined Trinseo at an interesting point in time, October 22, when I was having my interviews for this position, Trinseo was performing at an all-time high. Business was good. The chemical industry was doing really well. Coming out of Corona, very successful. Record earnings, record revenues, etc. When I joined, the chemical industry fell off a cliff.
Not because of you.
I hope not. No, this was a worldwide problem. Energy prices spiked, especially in Europe, and the global demand dropped about 20%. So from being highly profitable, we got into crisis mode basically overnight, like all our peers in the chemical industry. And it's been like that since I joined, basically. It is only since the beginning of this year where we see that the free fall has stopped. Markets are somewhat stabilizing at that significantly lower level, 20% lower demand, with a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. But even that is with a high level of uncertainty if you look at what's going on in the world today. And we don't have to go into the details, but all the big economical and political challenges that we face have a direct impact on the markets, as you know. So that's been a challenge. What I've been completely impressed with, and this is Trinseo's culture, is that despite the fact that we went into crisis mode, that we had to have a rigorous focus on our fixed costs and drive improvements, make difficult decisions on plant closures, like the example we used, we remained true to our vision and strategy of becoming a sustainable solutions company. We never compromised on that. Yes, we had to adjust somewhat, adapt to new market realities, But starting with our CEO and our executive leadership team and everybody in the company, we keep driving this vision towards becoming a sustainable solutions company. We don't compromise on that. If you look at our investments for next year, so like every big company, we have an investment plan for next year, big investments. It's a great proof point of staying committed to our vision and strategy, because if you look at where we spend our money next year, it is in sustainable solutions from an R&D point of view, as well as from a capital equipment point of view. I can keep talking about this.
We will. We will. First, to comment on what you just said, I think like we have, on the one hand, we have the technological advancement and developments. And on the other hand, we have the geopolitical difficulties.
Yes.
And that is, I guess, why when we came out of the pandemic, so what happened actually, so it has nothing to do with the technology side.
No.
So therefore, we have really to separate this when you think about the strategies or how the industries are performing, etc. So, and okay, let's stay with the difficult topics. You mentioned already Europe is a very interesting area when it comes to regulations, when it comes to all kinds of challenges that we have, but we have additionally all global environmental challenges. So
yes.
when we look at that, what are the most significant technical challenges that your R&D is currently facing?
Well, the most technical challenge, if we've hinted at that already, is there are more technical challenges. But a big one is to drive our sustainable solutions that still have a higher cost to produce in a market that is distressed and customers less willing to pay more for sustainable solutions. When you are in survival mode, you want to pay less, not more. And we also have observed this last year that the overall enthusiasm for sustainability has somewhat reduced globally with our customers and the markets we serve. Because many of our customers are in survival mode too. Just think about the automotive industry and what's happening in Germany. We see this as a short-term slowdown. If you look at our projections, we see this continue to pick up strong in the near future again. But that's a technical challenge, to make sure that our circular solutions are competitive, price competitive with virgin solutions, especially with virgin imports from other regions where production is at lower cost because of lower energy, especially in Europe.
Let's go even deeper in the details of creating sustainable materials and why is it so complicated? Because usually it's scalability that is really tricky. Would you say, yes, exactly that's the same, or is something additional that you see why it's so complicated in the beginning to have competitive prices, let's say, when working on?
So that is clearly a key element. The availability of waste feedstock in high volumes. It starts with the waste collection ecosystem. This is not an easy system to scale up. Usually waste is collected not even at a city level, but at a municipal level where it comes together and then at a city level. And you need to develop logistics systems to collect that waste, select that waste, process that waste. That is quite an intensive ecosystem that is still at a very early stage of development. So that's one big challenge, collecting waste feedstock in high volumes. It's also quite an expensive process. Interesting is that many of our customers are working with us and others in new ecosystems that are being formed to make that collection, waste collection, more effective. I think Volvo and other car companies have a great example where they collect headlamps at the end of life in one location in Europe. Headlamps are ideal for processing, for recycling. So if all headlamps are being collected in one location in Europe, that's a great opportunity. But that's a challenge. So that drives cost. I think the second element what drives cost is that you need to invest in new capital equipment. A lot of the installed chemical equipment can be used for decades. Obviously, you do maintenance, you optimize the system, you optimize the energy usage, but a lot of the capital equipment has a long life. So if you switch technology, a lot of that technology has to be written off, which is an expensive thing to do as a company. You have to invest in new capital equipment. So I think those two things drive the price of circular materials.
So now we stay with the challenges, but we go into the topic of people challenges, okay. Let's say. So, because you are a global company, so you have people in different regions of the world. We have different genders. We have different generations, as we talked the last time when we met. Now, so how do you manage so that the people are working together? Because at a certain size of a company, actually, in my previous company, Zika, so we talked like we had this sentence, if Zika knew what Zika knows, you know, because yes, when you are so big, somebody is doing something and that can be used for somebody else across the globe, etc. So how do you manage those R&D teams that are working maybe on similar things, etc., so that they talk to each other?
So that's a great question. I have always enjoyed very much, and I've been extremely motivated with the fact that almost 20 years now I've been in a global position where I have the opportunity to work with people around the world. I think it's extremely motivating, especially in an R&D and innovation environment where diversity drives creativity, drives new solutions. I think that's a logical conclusion. So working with a global R&D team is just fantastic to accelerate innovation. But there are also challenges. People speak different languages, have different cultures, etc. So in my view, in leading a global R&D organization is the processes that you develop. So for example, our innovation gate process, we have a pretty standard innovation gate process, 5 phases, 5 gates, etc., from initial ideas to market introduction. That's a well-described process with gate deliverables that each project team has to comply to in order to go to the next phase, in order to get funding for the next phase. That process is exactly the same wherever you go in Trentio. So although we speak different languages, our processes are our common language. And that also makes it easy to form project teams with team members from this different locations because they work in this process. They know our standards. They know what is required at a certain gate and they work together. Another example, by the way, when I joined Trentio 2 years ago as the first CTO of Trentio, we had a fragmented R&D organization reporting into different parts of the organization using different KPIs, different processes, different tools, no standards, no best practice sharing. So that was a fantastic opportunity and also for me a great point to step in. One discovery was that we were using 4 different LIMS, Lab Information Management Systems. So this is where all the know-how of our formulations and chemistries is being collected, also for the development of future solutions. So you can imagine if you have 4 different systems that are not compatible, that's not very effective as an organization that wants to be a learning organization, that wants to share information, share knowledge. So one of the bigger decisions we made was we standardize on 1 LIMS, Lab Information Management System. So although we work globally, we have team members from all regions, our processes and standards is our common language, and we continuously improve that.
I guess that's where your background also helped, because the experience from Yang yes. Feng also being a global company, I guess, was a huge impact on that.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the next challenge in the whole industry, in the whole chemical industry, is also the lack of the people that are well educated in those technical things. So how do you manage the, let's say, talent attraction, let's say, because it's in the end, it's a fight for the best people in the area. So yes. How do you do that?
Definitely more complicated than some time ago, and it's not one answer. But maybe the one answer is that as a leadership team, you have to prioritize this. And usually, in my experience, what you pay attention to, you can improve. And we pay attention to this. We're very serious about this. I can mention a couple of things that we're doing, and I'm sure it's the same that other companies would say, but then it comes to how you do it. We have 4 times per year, we have our talent management reviews, but then it's really about the commitment of each individual manager to follow up on the actions and development plans for the employees that we have. It's a systematic way of bringing students and interns and PhD students into our company. So we develop talent grassroots. We make them interested in our company and what we do. We give them a voice. We give them influence. So they experience an environment where they would like to work. A third thing that we have been building these past 2 years is the concept of a center of excellence. So we, as I said, we had a fragmented R&D organization. We had many small teams around the world. We are in the process of consolidating these small teams in larger centers of excellence, where instead of having 10 teams with 15 people in a certain region, now we have one location with 150 people, where you have cross-fertilization, where you have best-in-class laboratories, you have critical mass, you have more creativity, you have a place where customers go to see our portfolio, to meet with our scientists, also there to create an environment that is attractive for people to work. I think Trinzio specifically is a real forerunner in hybrid working. I think we have a very flexible approach to hybrid working, also as a way to attract talent. As you see, where we are today in Terneuzen is not in the heart of the Netherlands. It's a relatively remote area. And what you see is around the world, these larger chemical sites are often built in more remote areas with the intent to develop the region, to develop the area. But it also led to a situation that now it's more challenging to attract talent to those regions. Hence our approach to hybrid working, because if you have a flexible hybrid working policy, you can draw a bigger circle around your location to draw people to your company.
What does flexible mean for you, let's say, in that case? Do you have like fixed days where everyone needs to be in the office and then?
That's a million-dollar question. And we take an experimental approach to that. I firmly believe that let me approach the question from another direction. If we have two people with the exact same job description, one person comes in half a day per 2 weeks and the other person comes in 4 days per week, they have the exact same job. That cannot be a best practice, right? There has to be this sweet spot where with that position, at least you should have a certain level of interaction with your colleagues in person because it's more effective. So that's why we take a more experimental approach. We don't say there is a fixed day or 2 days or 3 days that you have to be in the office, but we're trying to identify those activities that are most effective to do in person and other activities that are very effective when you are wherever you want to be because you want to work more concentrated, alone, etc. So that's the approach we take. We don't have fixed days, but we try to identify those activities in R&D that are more effective when you do them in a room together with all the tools you need. And then there are certain jobs in our R&D environment where you just have to be in the lab to do the experiment because you cannot do them at home.
Exactly. It's a balance in the end.
It's a balance, yeah. Yes.
But I'm curious to know later, let's say in a few years, what are your experiments, let's say, yes. What the results of the experiments are telling you.
Yes. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I had a conversation with the R&D leader of one of our customers, and they're actually doing the same approach and we're exchanging notes. So they also have this more experimental approach where they look at what activities you should be doing in person and whatnot. So We learn from each other. By the way, that's also a way to position Trentio as a partner to our customers instead of just having a pure transactional relationship, to be a strategic partner.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yes. To develop together and actually work more on a collaborative spirit.
Collaborative, yes.
You mentioned also something that I want to pick up again and to emphasize that, because you said in the end it's also about the certain managers that have to implement that strategy or that leadership style, etc. So how do you yourself inspire your team or lead your team to, for example, take and sustainability seriously and really to implement that? So how do you do that personally?
It is extremely important to have a point of view. I mentioned this topic of point of view. You have to have a point of view on the future, where the world is going, where our industry is going, what's important to our customers, what matters most to them, etc. And I think although the chemical industry has lost some of its attraction, it's not AI, to name a competitor to attract talent. But what I have found is that the purpose that the chemical industry has is really to drive this transformation towards a sustainable world. That is huge inspiration. This transformation towards a circular world is what's going to happen because we need it. Otherwise, we will no longer be here in a certain period of time. The chemical industry is actually at the tip of the spear of driving that transformation. It starts with material science. It doesn't start with AI or automotive or SpaceX. It really starts with chemistry that drives this transformation towards a sustainable world. How much more inspiration do you need? How much more purpose do you need as a graduate student who wants to make a difference? The chemical industry is a great opportunity to drive something really important. So how do I do that? I speak about it to my colleagues, of course. I think we have developed a clear vision and strategy how Trentio is going to drive that transformation as a company with our KPIs and our strategies and our innovation projects and our commitments. And I think that's very exciting. It's one of the reasons why I had this, in my view, radical career change after more than two decades in the automotive industry to join a chemical company. I'm not a chemist, as you know. But the purpose of the chemical industry, the responsibility of the chemical industry is totally inspirational to help drive this transformation.
Have you anyway ever faced, let's say, maybe a smaller team, maybe a department where you really struggle to bring transformation processes forward? And if so, how do you manage that to work on the mindset? Because in the end, it's mindset, right? So
first of all, we don't face that much resistance. The resistance, it's not so much resistance that I've faced in the past 2 years. It's more distraction. When you are a company that has to reinvent itself in order to survive and has to make a lot of difficult decisions relative to our cost base, our footprint, etc., people are distracted. People are concerned. So that's the climate that we have been working in, at least for the past 2 years. Although, very happy to say again, it's improving. So it was more the challenge to build confidence in the future, in the middle of a crisis with the team, than people being resistant to this transformation towards becoming a sustainable solutions company. It's trying to maintain faith in the future, credibility of our strategies with the broader organization. And that's a leadership responsibility. You cannot step out of that responsibility. I also think that we have a lot of smart people in our company who have great views and insights. So in developing the strategy forward and to make sure that as many as people as possible become accelerators of this strategy is that you have to do this in an inclusive way. This is also my personal leadership style to bring people in. One of the later questions you're going to ask me is, what is your life motto? I have a new motto every day, but a few stick with me.
How do you know that?
Okay, yeah, anyway. I shouldn't say that.
No.
Okay. We can talk about it later.
No, keep on going. It's
so, but one thing that is really important in how we drive and accelerate towards our vision is that it's a bit of a cliche motto, but if you want to go fast, you go alone. If you want to go far, you work as a team. And that's very much our mindset and culture at Trinzio as well. This responsibility of transforming the company towards a sustainable solutions company is too big to do on your own. So inclusive is one way to keep people with you in this journey.
Actually, you're right. I think that forced transformation is never good.
No.
But if you can really... I just recently heard actually a talk from a psychologist, and she was talking about learning effects and also learning with AI, etc. So, but my question to her in the end of the talk was actually like, and how is it about the motivation? So like, because you can learn whatever you want, but if you don't want to learn, so no one is going to change anything, right? So and with AI, without AI, so that's not the question. She said like, the best motivation is still make it personal for people.
Yes.
So, and if you do that, and if everyone has like, okay, because we are working for maybe our own children or for the nephews or,
yes,
you know, like for the future, but the future has a face and you know exactly for who you do that, that changed the whole story. So that's why it's so inspiring, right? So, yeah. And actually, I ask everyone about the life models.
Okay.
This question is definitely going to come, you know.
Exactly.
So... and actually, you mentioned this word first, so I will pick on that as well, AI.
Right.
I wouldn't say that, okay, AI attracts now more people and chemical industry is not, because AI is nowadays everywhere. So actually,
yes.
So it doesn't really need
to be... No, you're right. It's not a separate...
Purely AI company, IT company, let's say. Okay. And I think that you already start also to look into, let's say, how it can help you to be maybe faster or to be more creative, or in which way do you implement AI already currently in Trinzio?
So multiple layers. First of all, it's a strategic topic at Trinzio, and it's a true partnership between R&D and our IT group. As a matter of fact, R&D is the test bed for our IT department to experiment what Trinzio should be doing and what we roll out at a corporate level in terms of AI applications and use cases. So that's we have a general layer of AI that I think everybody is using. Take Copilot, for example, and all the efficiencies that come with using that. But then specifically to the R&D environment, it's a huge opportunity as well. So AI is really about data processing, right? And as I already mentioned, we made a decision to go from 4 different lab information management systems to one system. One important criteria to choose what system we're going to invest in was the ability of that system to serve as a platform, as a jump board, to enhance the AI functionality of that system. Very important criteria. So as we are now in the middle of the rollout, global rollout for every location of that LIMS, we have a parallel strategy to add AI functionality because it's now a huge database that will allow us to develop faster. We do a lot of DOEs, design of experiments, so we can use multiple parameters faster and do simulations much faster. For example, many of our scientists, they look for similar DOEs when they design their own DOE. The way the system works is that we can do all of that much faster now. So I think we don't know what we don't know. Usually, chemical scientists are not AI experts, but the partnership with our IT department and our willingness, our mindset that we like experimentation in R&D makes it a very exciting opportunity for our future.
I think working with AI, it doesn't matter in which area, it's actually a lot about experimenting, like
yes,
how you prompt, how you ask questions, so exactly,
yes,
et cetera. So
how you ask questions is essential. Yeah.
it's a lot about basically experiments. So yes. Chemists would love it.
Exactly.
I do. Yes. But yes. And of course, we mentioned like the benefits from AI. But as you started to play with that, have you noticed also there are some challenges? And if yes, which?
So inaccuracies is one challenge that we have. Or too generalist answers. But then you mentioned it already. It's also a capability that we have to develop as an organization, as individuals, is our ability to ask the right questions. That's essential. And also the risk for failure if you don't ask the right questions. Mm-hmm. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
A little bit.
It makes it more complicated. But also, as I mentioned before, with the best practices, let's say hybrid or not, we can also talk later about that because we will all be playing a little bit and seeing how it goes. No? So basically, as a CTO, you have really to balance between both strategical and technical expertise, et cetera, et cetera. So, but that is really the bird view. And if we come closer, there's this day-to-day practice. So what really motivates you personally to go and take on this challenge that is a very challenging job? So what motivates you on a day-to-day basis?
So I think a few things motivate me. So when I joined Trinzio 2 years ago, when I was actually in the reflection process for myself, I had a great job in the auto industry with my previous company and just fantastic. And I enjoyed it very much. And I was comfortable because I was an expert. I knew everything. Not many surprises. And now I was interviewing with a chemical company that I know nothing about chemistry, or let's say basic from my job in R&D in the automotive industry, but I'm not a chemist. I have no experience in the chemical industry, et cetera, et cetera. So why am I interested to make this move? And it was a few things. So first of all, and I mentioned this already, was during my time in the auto industry, I got increasingly very passionate about this opportunity for transformation, this need for transformation towards a sustainable society, sustainable world. And my view was that the chemical industry is at the tip of the spear of that whole transformation. So that was one great motivation. The second, probably most important motivation that motivates me every day is working with people, building with people. And that is industry agnostic. And that was probably the best aha moment in that self-reflection. I had not had a job interview for 23 years. So you sort of lose that reflection on what am I actually doing and is this what I like to do? But reflecting in that interview period, it was really about building with people. And that's industry agnostic. So if I combine those two things, working on something that is really important for the world, this transformation towards a sustainable world, and doing that with a great team and with great people makes me very motivated every day. Yes.
Really interesting to hear that when people reflect that it still, even you go on your day, let's say day to day, etc., and if you start to reflect that something new comes up about yourself, isn't it really fascinating?
because it was a difficult decision because I was comfortable. I could stay another 10 years with the company and enjoy what I'm doing. So what makes you do something different and what motivates you to do something different? It's interesting.
It's curiosity. It's curiosity. Something that's different that you could move even more, let's say. And that not in financial or this kind of accolades, success, etc. So no, it's about like you could change something bigger.
Yes, exactly.
So that the impact.
But
the impact
you know what was also motivational is the fact that, and it's a risk, can I reinvent myself and still be successful in a completely unknown area? That was also very motivating. Give it a try. I can give it a try. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. It's a problem, but that was also motivational to just try something completely new.
But the reply is always yes.
Yes.
If you're there.
At some point.
I know.
Yeah, exactly. So that's fascinating. At some point, I woke up and I thought, there is no way back. I cannot go back. I have to do this. It's very clear.
Yeah. Do you have something like, let's say, current favorite project or something that is a breakthrough or something that is really like you are personally attached to that you are most excited about? Do you have something like that?
So I have a few projects that I really like, but the ones that I spent most time on are at the moment the most complicated ones that are at a turning point. And this is also our advanced recycling technologies, because three of them are at this tipping point where we go from pilot plant to scale up. And we have to make a lot of decisions. Where are we going to manufacture? How are we going to manufacture? How much are we going to manufacture? Designing the industrial scale of the process. So that's fascinating, very important, very strategic, and that's where I spend most of the time. But I'm equally excited, for example, with our battery casing project. So for EV batteries, 95% is steel. We think it should be plastic. It has a better value proposition. It's lighter weight, it's circular. You can integrate functions because you only have one tool and you inject it or press it and you have all these functions. So it has a lot of advantages. I think that's also a fascinating project. So, yeah, we have a lot of interesting projects, but the ones that are at a turning point, I spent most time on.
You said in the previous reply you could have stayed for 10 years more at Yanfeng and doing just and being comfortable, let's say.
Yes. So,
I would say no, you couldn't.
No, it's at
you
some
love
point,
the challenge, you
know.
You love the highest impact. That fits your character.
Yes, yes.
And not staying and being comfortable. Sorry
right.
to say that.
Yes, exactly.
That's my reflection on that.
Yes.
So my next question is about your leadership style. Was somebody an inspiration for you, how you became this type of leader that loves to work with people, etc.? Have you seen an example in the past or you just became that by working, by shaping yourself, by taking one detail here, etc.? So how did it come?
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything. But to answer your question, I did have role models, but not specific. I didn't call them role models. I don't want to make this bigger as it is. But there were a few people in my life that have inspired me to make certain decisions that influenced my career significantly. I remember when I was in the first year of doing my architectural studies in Maastricht, first year in September. So I was doing this for 1 month, really at the beginning. And there was a lecture at the university of the head of corporate design of a Dutch company called Osei, later acquired by Canon, copiers and printers. And this guy spoke for an hour. And I thought, I want to do what you do. This is great. This is actually combining the design and creativity on one hand, but in a business company environment. So I finished my architectural design studies, but I did a postgraduate in industrial design. And my first job was with him. So this guy really influenced my career. And I had a few more of those events in my life. I've had great direct bosses, supervisors, almost without exception, especially in a corporate environment. When you progress your career, every 2-3 years, you end up with a new direct boss. I've had great direct bosses. So that also helped. They were role models in a certain way.
Sometimes it's underestimated how big of a difference it makes to have somebody like this.
Yeah.
I would like to talk about the legacy that you want to leave at Trinzia. Not because you are going to leave soon or anything. So I wish you lots and lots of years of life, good health, and lots of challenges so that you stay, because it will be interesting for you to stay and solve them. When you see your contribution at Trinzia, so what would you want to be your biggest legacy? So what would you want to shape the most?
So what I really like about the role that I have, which is really R&D and our sustainability activities is that it's at the heart of our company strategy. It's at the heart of our company strategy. It is our vision. It is the company that we want to be in the future. So I'm really excited and honored and humbled to be in that role to help shape that future for the company. So the legacy that I hope to leave is that we are a significant step forward in the direction of becoming a circular company, a truly sustainable solutions company. That's, and I mean, there are other things very important. Trinseo, known for a world-class R&D organization, an operating model where people really enjoy working, that attracts talent. I think that's the second point that I would mention here.
Very good. May that happen.
Yes.
But many years in the future.
Exactly.
From now. So, and what is the personal or professional, or maybe and professional advice would you give to your 18-year-old self?
Three things that I can think about. You cannot, so assume that my 18-year-old self would end up in a first job at some company. First of all, try to develop your point of view on how it all works in the company and in the business and in the industry that you are in. Develop your point of view and talk about that in a very broad way. Usually you start in a very narrow position as your first job, but try to understand the big picture of the company that you work in and the industry that you work in. Talk about that with your colleagues. So with every conversation, you become smarter in understanding the big picture. And that big picture helps you with your big and small decisions every day. So you become very effective. So that was the first advice I would give myself. The second advice is try to find out what is the eye of the tornado in your company. What is most important? What is the biggest problem, the most complex challenge in the company? And try to find a way to be part of the team that has to solve that. So really try to be in that eye of the tornado for your company. It's not always possible, or sometimes it takes 2 years before you can join a team like that, that is really looking at the biggest challenges and trying to develop strategies and actions. But have that in mind. Identify the eye of the tornado for your company. Try to become part of fixing it. And then the third point is, we talked about it. Find people that you think are a leading example. Can be more people, some person in this area, another person in another area. But those three things: understand the big picture from day one, try to find the eye of the tornado of your company and be part of it, and find people around you that you can learn from.
Very good. Thank you.
Sure.
And my next question is about the mistake that you maybe made in a professional life, but where you learned so much from it that you actually didn't regret it at all afterwards.
I think I have many of those.
Can you mention some?
Yes. So one important one is that it was in my first job. Relatively quickly, I was given an interesting project, quite a complicated project. And I worked for weeks, very hard, worked for weeks. And then I was planning for this big report out, this big presentation. And I thought, I'm going to hit a home run. This is going to be fantastic. And I'll impress people with my proposal, with my solution. And so I did my presentation, and the feedback was not so good. It was not enthusiastic. It completely not what I hoped, what I expected. And the number one reason was that I did everything on my own. I tried to figure out everything on my own. I thought I knew it better, and I didn't involve people, and I didn't talk to people, and I didn't ask people. I did everything on my own, and I thought, I'm going to blow away the room. And the opposite happened. So again, here, someone spent some time with me and made me reflect on that learning, and it stuck with me for the rest of my life. Yeah.
actually, you'd never want to create people that are just alone in their lab.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. No. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. That the last question that is left is actually your life motto. You still want to change something or to add something that you already previously said?
Yeah. So, maybe adding one. And I think that also motivates me in life and in my job. And that is, I think I'm an optimist. My wife sometimes thinks I'm not a realist, but I am an optimist. And I think everything can always be better. So waking up every day with that idea that today we're going to try to make everything a little bit better. What I'm going to do it a little bit better. I think you have to have that mindset when you work in R&D as well, because you want to improve things that are around today. You want to make them better for tomorrow. That is so internalized. So that's one life motto. Things can always be better at a personal level, at a business level, at a project level. And then the second one is don't do it on your own, but work as a team. Yes.
Really inspiring. Actually, yeah, thank you very much for this conversation. I learned a lot about sustainability, about Trinzio, about strategies, also how to balance it all, but lots and lots about leadership advice and what is actually life at Trinzio now and how you developed that and also what is your impact. And also why it's actually so attractive for you or was attractive for you to change and to enter in Trinzio team. Thank you very much. It was super. Loved it every second of it. So it was worth it to come here to a small city where it's really like not to say a big city. Yes, it is. No? So as we already talked, like it's like the third biggest harbor in Netherlands, what yes. I learned, but it doesn't have a train station, which is sad for me. So it was absolutely worth it. Looking forward to see all the production side and to meet the team, etc. So thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you, Ludmila. Very good.
There are many ways to achieve a more sustainable future. There are many companies and innovative leaders who choose and actively go very different ways. Let's just not forget one thing. No matter how different the ways are, the big goal is one and the same. See you very soon in the next episode.